Okay, we are back. I think for episode 327, if I got that right. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, this week I proposed that we talk about our sexual dystopia, the current state of affairs between men and women. What used to be called the war between the sexes, was a product of the so-called sexual revolution that was declared or was waged all so many years ago. That was your generation, right? That was like 60s. You lived it, right?
I did. We lost.
So you experienced sort of the euphoric age
Well, I mean, in
of
the,
the revolution. You know, revolutions have these stages, euphoria, then you're dealing with the reality of the situation, you have the reaction and counter revolution, which I somewhat experienced in my coming of age. But so
yeah, we there was the late 60s. There was the promotion of hookup sex, and the idea that marriage was neurotic. I mean, these are, basically the same ideas that were pushed in the Hungarian Soviet in 1919, really. I mean, that
Yes.
were a lot different. And when you're, like 17 years old, and you're not getting cultural mentoring, they seem like, gee, it's going to be a lot of fun. But of course, then you look at how miserable the baby boomers' life was, so it didn't work out.
No, well, perhaps it did, or it's working out. It depends what the intention is behind it. These things aren't entirely organic, although they do take on a life of their own. There's
Yeah, they're
emergent
not organic
behavior, there's
at all.
nudge
They're
theory.
obvious. They're agendas. Yeah.
Yes. And so, like, like I said, institutions can encourage responsible moral behavior. They can discourage that and encourage irresponsible, immoral behavior. This E. Michael James came up with a thesis back in the late 90s with his book Libido Dominandi. It was sexual liberation as political control, and that was a very pithy way to explain I think the metapolitics behind the sexual revolution and the idea of feminism and the introduction and promotion of pornography, meaning that it was a way to excite and exploit the passions and the appetites that can be easily manipulated, especially if you're given the technology to do that, which occurred in the 20th century, with innovations like, well, the projector, film, obviously photography in the 19th century, and then of course television, particularly cable television, because there are always restrictions on television, and of course down with the internet. Since the late 1990s, there's been streaming of pornography, which is virtually free now. So it's very easy to project these images throughout these products that will mislead and excite the passions. And advertising is a big part of that. Modern communication was always based on exploiting a human behavior as opposed to informing and edifying the populations. They're exploiting and extracting. And maybe speak to the people who got control of those mediums or media rather. A few years ago, I read a book. It was called Sexual Dystopia, or sorry, Sexual Utopian Power, by Roger F. Roger Devlin. It was a very interesting book. It took a different take on sort of the sexual revolution, feminism, and women. One innovation the book gave us was it tend to put most of the responsibility, at least. Hold women responsible for their behavior and basically how focusing on female behavior in the wake of the sexual revolution. He was he, in the book, Devlin is very critical of mainstream conservative responses to the sexual revolution, which sort of he argued it echoed feminist complaints about innocent women being preyed upon by wicked men, who must be punished for their transgressions. One of the most controversial, I think, or provocative aspect of Devlin's work is his argument that today's sexual dystopia is rooted just as much in women's nature as in men's. Exploring female hypergamy was a big thing, mating up, narcissism, infidelity, deceptiveness, and masochism. These are the things that are there. Again, have to be restrained and controlled by morality, institution, these things. But of course, the sexual revolution lifted all that, all those restraints, and therefore these sort of these, I guess, these vices or this sort of sinfulness is unleashed on the world, and it's promoted. And he offers sort of a non-traditional a defense of traditional sexual morals and institutions, and offered a way out of it, actually. Basically, it was just a reversion to strict conservatism, men demanding that women behave, men demanding that they're in charge, that women submit to their authority, and then also going on a sexual strike, and sort of men just not marrying, just not bothering with it, and then making women comply and holding, more or less calling, declaring a marriage strike. Now, I don't know if such a thing is feasible. Basically, this is the only way to get back to normalcy and get society back on track. Now, what got me thinking about this was I've been also viewing a lot of videos from so-called life coaches. Some of them are more serious than others. Some of them are more cartoonish than others. It's these guys, you know, that inhabit what the so-called manosphere. Isn't exactly mit-gal, men going their own way, but they're offering men advice how to navigate this world when all the rules have been upended, meaning that the idea, the traditional advice to men to get married, get a job, be gallant, and, you know, and marry the right woman is going to work out for you. They're saying, well, the rules have changed now. All the law, marriage laws, divorce laws are against men. I think close to 80% of divorces are initiated by women now. They usually get custody of the child, and also they also get support. So men are forced to pay alimony, and sometimes even after the woman remarries, depending on the state, the laws depend. You vary with the state and also with the country. I think the book, most of the examples I hear are from Canada or North America, Canada, or the United States, and the horror stories. But basically, this advice that people give out, but you know, don't get married, don't settle down with one woman. And some of the advice is useful because some of the advice is don't focus on chasing women, chase goals, chase excellence and achievement. And then you will be attractive to women, which is essentially correct. One of the observations is that men are what they call, well, one of the accusations is that men look at women as sex objects. Well, in a way that's true, but women look at men as success objects, meaning that men, if they are successful, they will be attractive to women. Well, now there's a reason for this, because women traditionally, if women are going to depend on a man to support her, he has to be able to provide the resources. So men who can provide the most resources are going to be most attractive to women. That's hypergamy. But in an era where monogamy was smashed, hypergamy was unleashed, and women could trade up with very little consequence, meaning that the laws themselves encourage very bad, irresponsible behavior on the part of women. This disrupts it. Disrupts the upends the sexual constitution. So what happens is that women, will dump men, move on to the next, and that sort of thing. Meaning, women always look for their best deal, which kind of makes sense. One psychiatrist I was watching YouTube explain this is that how men view relationships, how women view relationships, and it's kind of he reduces that down to a transactional relationship, which in a way is correct, but you know, obviously it's much more than that. He says that men look at relationships, i.e. women, as money, and women look at relationships, men as jobs, meaning that the reason why men work hard to attain some level of success is to get the gal, get the girl, get the relationship. Women look at the relationship to get the resources. You can see how this relationship is transactional, but also complementary. And you strip it of its, you know, religious, moral, accoutrements or wrapping. It kind of reduces that level, but you can see how society is helped by this. Now, traditionally in the West, we've had monogamy and marriage, which guaranteed a balanced sexual market. But in the wake of the sexual revolution, when monogamy was smashed and you had no-fault divorce imposed, and that was destroyed, and patriarchal authority, the father figure, the role model, was his authority was questioned, if not destroyed. It wasn't like with the sexual revolution, you had a whole lot more sex available to people. There's only, you know, roughly, society's roughly 50-50 men and women. It's not as if with the sexual revolution, every man's going to be able to have a harem. You know, because you still have the same proportionality there. What's going to happen is with the sexual, and this is what Roger Devlin talks about in the book, is with the sexual revolution, what you had is hypergamy, and you had maybe 10, 15% of men getting a lot more sex, the other men marginalized, and those women chasing those top men. And you can see how disruptive that can be to society. And we see that today. Of course, we have the advent of social media, the idea that women, he covers this in the book, where in the past, women, before Hollywood, women would only be familiar with the men in their community. With Hollywood and the creation of the celebrity and Cary Grant and the silver screen, they got the idea of really attractive men. So all of a sudden, average people were competing. Same thing with women too, by the way. We're competing with the looks of celebrities and crystal development of celebrity culture. And this also, you can see this with pornography and also social media now, which I'm not familiar with because my dating, when I was dating, these things didn't exist, like Tinder, that you had to actually go out and talk to a girl, ask for her phone number, call her up and talk to her. Apparently these things are very different now, but with Tinder, you can swipe and just look, check out guys all over the country. So no, you know, the markets have been sort of globalized, which makes it very difficult for men and women to meet up. It also increases, it creates unrealistic standards and too many choices, which drive people insane. Have you? I'll let you kick in here now. Have you like observed any of this like manosphere, life coaches, advice on dating? How you know they've taken the red pill? They no longer think marriage is a good idea. Men shouldn't settle down. They shouldn't settle for one-itis, as they call it. Shouldn't settle for one woman. Generally speaking, some of this advice is sound given the current environment, but ultimately it's destructive. And one critique of the book is Roger Devlin. A lot of these life coaches don't really address who's really pushed this change. What's the meta politics behind it? So I've rambled on and enough here.
That's a really good actual synopsis of sort of where we are. I haven't done any recently, but a couple of years ago, I did some podcasts with individuals who are in kind of the new male, philosophy, you know, where they were trying to come up with techniques for men to navigate, you know, through the kind of legal morass. I said, well, your position is really terrible. And I can understand why you have all of these ideas about how dysfunctional relationships are and how you have to basically have a kind of mercenary, you know, sort of attitude.
Don't they call it game? You have to have game.
Yeah, they have. Well, they were these guys that I was doing the podcast were really interesting in that they had sort of analyzed and calculated like, well, what males can have sex and what you have to do to be in this category. And if you're not in that category, which incidentally, these guys would all admit to, you know, they didn't have the kind of either looks or money or stature, you know, so mm-hmm. how they approach sex, you know, and how to get it, how to acquire it. And I said that then, and I still believe that, you know, the real problem here is that you can't think clearly, basically, because you've been driven insane. Because the first thing you want to do is try to back calculate how you got here. What happened? And if you don't understand the process by which we got to this point where, you know, sexuality is we're basically destroyed at this point. I mean, pornography is, which is basically a cultural black hole that can suck all of civilization into it, you know, is unleashed. It's everywhere. I look at TikTok scenes that they basically have this meme where they ask women, young women, attractive young women, to name the most degenerate sex act they've done. And they're very happy, in at least the ones who come on. I'm sure there are some who refuse and they don't get put on. But they'll just talk about it ad nauseum as though there's no consequence for this, as though public displays of their pornographic sort of reality won't ever come back to be an issue in the future because their minds are not even aware of the possibility of either romance or marriage or family. These things are not, you know, ideas. And what I did back then when I was talking, and they had some kind of like acronym, like men, I don't know what it was, but you know, they were kind of well-known guys in this world of.
This is MGTOW, men going their own way.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's I said, look, guys, you have to go back to the Hungarian Soviet. I always do this, you know, and to the authoritarian personality. I said,
this is Gregor Lukacs, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I said, look, why do you think they're promoting pornography and trying to damage family formation? Why do they do this? What is the point? If you think about like the authoritarian personality and you get to them saying, well, we've got to use Eros as our propaganda device. Why did they pick Eros? Why not like reason or, you know, justice? Or no, they chose Eros for some particular reason. Why do you think they did that? And so this is the first thing is just to, if you want to make this situation better, you have to start having a broad understanding of the fact that we got here through deliberate maneuvers, which were malevolent. Again, if you cannot honestly describe the fact that there is evil and genocide that is being applied with these things, you're never going to even have a reasonable discussion, let alone something that'll help young men and women change their behavior. You've got to point out to them, look, why you behave like this is because you have been brought step by step, your culture, your background, your media, all of the things that have produced your consciousness have over time been not just debased, but have been debased in a very particular way so that you're not going to have family formation. I mean, if you look at like what Luchas was doing in Hungarian Soviet, I mean, why would he, you know, want to bring out degenerate and polysexualism as part of, you know, Marxism? What is the purpose of this? It's because by wrecking the family, they wreck the ethnicity and they create isolation. This is the whole trick here, is that they want to isolate humans, right? So that they don't have the bonds that basically they are naturally designed to use to create strength for the individual, and then the individual creates strength for the ethnicity through family. They want to get rid of that, so they have, you know, just isolated what I call pornographic males and single moms, right? That if they are, of course, even having children at this point, typically they don't, but single women, because they can be so easily controlled. It's that simple. And the reason they want to control them is to genocide them. You know, when you look at, look at Gaza or the Ukraine or the vaccine mandates. I mean, these things aren't done just, they're not just pulled out of a hat at random. These are deliberate depopulation maneuvers. And so when you know, if you're a young man and you go into a bar and you see what culturally is available, right, in this activity, you're really looking at just flat out genocide. Your ethnicity is being destroyed and your family producing is being destroyed. And there is a lot of schmarmy and basically, you know, psychotic hookup sex that may be available, particularly after you've been intoxicated. But what you can even tell by what occurs the next morning, that this isn't really going to be some sort of, you know, upward trend in your, you know, in the meaning and happiness of your life. I mean, but you can't, but the, particularly men can't help it because they're exposed to pornography so systematically that it's like you were talking about how, you know, now, you know, women have to compete against movie stars. And okay, well, why is that? I mean, this is a deliberate maneuver to push the male into a very narrow pornographic aspect of sexuality, you know, with young, attractive, you know, kind of fantasy type women. And this is available on the internet for everyone, right? Now, how does that affect reality? Well, it diminishes reality. It makes reality, you know, unpleasant to experience because the women don't look like that. They don't behave like that.
Movie stars actually don't look like movie stars.
Well, exactly right. So anyway, so what I'm saying is that is that to me, the first step is to ask the question of, have we been attacked? You know,
years ago, I was watching, this must have been 20 years ago, where I was watching one of these stupid Saturday morning shows on celebrities, and there was on celebrities' homes. Another aspirational propaganda to make you feel inadequate because you don't have a mansion in Malibu, right? And so they're just showing the homes of the rich and famous. And this was the home of Britney Spears. You know how happy she's been?
Yeah.
And she was, they're just displaying Britney Spears' home, if that's actual or her home, or she actually owned it or not, you know. And she goes, and this is, you know, this is the pool room. Here's the living room. Here's the dining room. And here's the sunroom where Britney spends her days being fabulous. Poor Britney never has a flu. She's just fabulous all 24/7, right?
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, the concept of fabulous is
your days being, you know, fabulous,
right? Just being fabulous. But you can see how this is all part of an agenda. I mean, they're trying to remove humanity and the human experience from relationships, yeah. Right? It's just fabulousness, fabulous sex, fabulous, you know, red carpet experiences, fabulous wealth, fabulous homes, and then you're off to the mental asylum like Britney, because the fabulousness wore off for half an hour, and at that point, you know,
you're shaving your head, yeah, in protest. Her
nature kind of reappeared, and she goes, "What in the hell am I doing? You know, what is this? This is there's no meaningful connection in my life to humans or reality." So, you know, they have really got you know, pornography and kind of the attractiveness of a non-family, non-ethnically based life out there in the public, right? It's just very powerful right now. And it attracts all of the young people who are, you know, being subjected to it. I mean, the music, sports, right? You know, the promotion of all of these violent kind of sport heroes, you know, and then wealth, these things. But there isn't any aid from the media in terms of how to navigate real life. That was why when I was talking to those males a couple years ago, it was fascinating to have them describe their actual experience about the loneliness, the feelings of just complete impotence, you know, and that the entire world was aligned against them. And I pointed out that, you know, you're absolutely right. This is not, you know, you're not hallucinating. But and what they were trying to do to make their lives better was very reasonable. But the point is, this isn't going to, you know, change anything. This isn't going to move things in a direction where you can start having family production increase. So the best news, I think, of, you know, in the last 50 years has been the kind of the movement to resegregate. That has occurred since the vaccine mandates and the destructions of the inner city. The people who are leaving these areas, which were just hotbed of degeneracy, are going out to the smaller communities, which are saner enclave types. And there, hopefully, they can, you know, bring the lessons with them about pornography, about you know, the fabulousness of wealth that is given as an, you know, kind of a direction to head, and try to see if they can do what is really possible, which is to reestablish community and family. I mean, you see, Tim, these goals will not only give them a better life than the direction that the media, you know, is trying to seduce them with. But these things are possible because they come from real human experience. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So this is a time when we really might be able to make some positive changes, because, like, for one thing, like, homeschooling is a great thing because it creates a community. This is one of the things that needs to be reestablished, is just the sense of belonging to a community of like-minded and people with, you know, similar values. And then, of course, family is a big part of that, too. So, you know, I just feel that at this point, it's sort of like, well, feminism, which I'm sure we'll talk about eventually, which was one of the things that was given as, you know, something that would benefit women. But, you know, now that we can see it in hindsight, we can see that actually, you know, that this doesn't create a better life for anyone. So I think that at this point we can actually, when like pornography is presented as something that's you know, beneficial to someone's life, we have enough experience now that we can actually start to fight back a little bit. We shouldn't be so bedazzled by the fairy tale aspect of these things and say, well, you know, we have this reality that has occurred over the last 50 years, which has produced so much miserable, isolated individuals. Let's actually talk about how we can restore community and family. And, you know, one thing that is can be completely destroyed, it's very interesting to me, is romance. I mean, romance was a big deal in the 50s. Think of the movies and like Motown, you know, these kinds of ideas. What happened to that? It's just completely been taken off the table, you know. So anyway, so that these are the, we can go back to what is possible, what we can achieve, and by doing that, we have a much better life.
Well, one of the mistakes, obviously, when the lies about feminism, one thing is the idea that men being privileged and women being oppressed. You know, you can very easily spin a narrative that actually the converse is true. If you look at history, again, it's the idea that young women, because they're equal to young men, their decisions can be left to their good judgment. Only problem is very few young women have good judgment and they need guidance. But if you unleash them under the world, they'll be easily manipulated, as they are so often now. And we have institutions for this. They're called colleges and universities, of course, where you have a woman, a girl who's 17 or 18, has lived a sheltered existence in her home, you know, under the wing of her parents, and all they send her off to college, other side of the country. Pretty soon, she's completely unregulated. She can come and go as she pleases. She can bring people into her room wherever she pleases, or she can go to someone else's room if she pleases. She's getting all the messaging at the universities. And as we've discussed, universities and colleges aren't run by, you know, moral responsible people anymore. For quite the opposite, actually. You see that at Harvard and Yale and University of Pennsylvania. These, you know, so it's that's just stupid. And we see the results of that. And we think that they're getting educated, you know, whatever. And they come back with blue hair, 20 pounds heavier, and they hate their fathers. In Roger Devlin's book, he writes, practicality dictates keeping young people on the narrow path that is best for both themselves and for society. So the older discourse on sex was pretty much limited to the inclusions of marriage backed by religious sanctions. Religious awe being the only force strong enough to counter something as primal as the sex instinct. But we, again, as you mentioned, with the sexual revolution, when all the institutions, laws have been distorted, retarded, and turned upside down, this transvaluation has kicked in, the old rules no longer apply. And he writes, Devlin writes, but the formally effective method of regulating sexual behavior is one thing. A rational understanding of sex is something else entirely. And today, a correct understanding is what we most need. Traditional normative discussion of sex and marriage presupposes a social order in which lifelong monogamy enjoys social and legal sanction. The rearing of the young was intended to reinforce the already existing order. Once moral and legal sanctions have been withdrawn and the monogamous order destroyed, the old advice can be harmful to the young man or woman who follows it. The case, plainly put, the young woman or young man rather or woman who waits for marriage in the contemporary West is likely either to wait forever or to be divorced within a few years. The case, he equates this to offering about financial advice. He goes, the case is similar to the hoary advice to put money aside for a rainy day. As long as one is living in a reasonably healthy economy, the advice is good, but in the context of a currency inflation where the value of money is being eroded faster than it can be saved, saving money becomes counterproductive. Like inflation, sexual liberation turns the marketplace morally upside down by actively punishing the virtuous and rewarding the vicious. Young people are gradually figuring this out for themselves through painful experience. And if traditionalists have nothing better to offer than the repetition of their grandparents' advice suited to a vanished order, they will lose whatever tatters of authority they yet retain. In short, the modern West must face up to its systematic failure to properly socialize its young, particularly the females, particularly women. So that's the predicament we're in. Again, and when you look at some of these sites where men have taken the red pill and offering this advice, given the new rules, some of the advice is sound. The only problem is it avoids addressing the rules.
It doesn't address the causality, and that's what I disagree with this approach. I mean, culture and ethnic culture was what protected women when they went away to college, mm-hmm. right? There was a cultural milieu that everyone was in. It had certain instructions that were unconscious and implied for everyone, right? There was this idea in like the 40s and 50s about the production of marriage. I mean, I mean, I don't have it at my fingertips, but I think like over 50% of women were married by the time they graduated from college. Okay. So, mm-hmm. so marriage was an enormous component of the college experience. It was part of what was culturally implied. It was just the world that everyone swam in. Okay, so how did that change? Well, what has to be understood is that the pornographers and the proto-feminists, and the authoritarian personality science, this is a project. This is something that is being done against European Christian culture to destroy it. And it's not trying to take the inhabitants of the culture to a brave new world, to a workers' paradise. That's part of the sophistry. It's trying to take them into the fentanyl brigade and into the single mom with the paycheck that comes from the government in the mailbox. I mean, this is what was designed by these people who brought these things about. And so to react against this, to try to create, a movement back toward a more healthy life for all of the people, in this world, we've got to address the fact that there was an attack and it was malevolent. And its purpose is genocide, because then you can look at things like Hugh Hefner, Harvey Weinstein, the films that, you can look at, Leave the World Behind, is it the Obama?
Oh yeah, yeah. I saw a review of that. Yeah,
it's just complete. It's just an absolute psychological attack upon the people who watch this. It's just, there's no question. It's just there like a zombie film to make people lose agency, lose the ability to think clearly. Be afraid, and also, I won't go into it at this point, but. But the point is, these aren't just stupid ideas. This isn't just, well, it was a mistake. I mean, you have to organize yourself around the idea, look, we're being attacked. That, because then you have the right approach and you can come up with the right ways to resist it. I mean, think about like a group of young European men and women on a college campus. Just imagine this on some UC campus. How would they organize themselves in order to at the end of their experience there, start producing a life for themselves as a group that was really going to be satisfying and, with something that was oriented around family and children, things like this. They'd have to isolate. They would have to have the articulation, to be able to resist, when people attack them as racist or sexist or any of the ways that such a group would be attacked. So they would have to develop that right off the bat to move forward. So I would just say that if you want to get real about this stuff, you got to have an honest description of how this thing began, who began it. It's Judeo-Masonic. And what's the purpose of it? It isn't the workers' paradise we're headed toward. It's oblivion.
Well, yeah, feminism wasn't a mistake. It was an attack, and people have done the research. And first of all, Gloria Steinem was worked for the CIA. Now, why would the CIA be promoting feminism? I thought their business was fighting, defending the country and fighting communists during the Cold War. It's a central intelligence agency. Why is it involved in social engineering and cultural programming? Well, because they would say, well, this under because. Follow, it falls under the broad umbrella of security. Well, what's your evidence of security? National security is control of society, I guess you could say. But Gloria Steinem, again, she worked for Cord Meyer. That was Mary Meyer's husband. Mary Meyer, the lady who reportedly had an affair with JFK, was found dead on the canal towpath in 1964 because she had a diary, supposedly, that was compromised information regarding the true details of the assassination of the president. So she worked for Cord Meyer, and she was part of the Independent Research Service, which was part of the Congress of Culture Freedom. It was all about cultural manipulation, mainly through publication and promoting the arts, modern art, and this is all part of the CIA operation. But she was promoted. Of course, she was supposed to be a radical leftist feminist who used to date Henry Kissinger. Now, well, can you imagine them dating? I can imagine them, Henry picking her up on a date, knocking on her apartment. They're going out and they're sitting down at the restaurant, and she says to Henry, "So, Henry, what do you do for a living?" I don't know. I mean, what is this dating? I mean, by the 70s, he's in his fifth, whatever. I don't know. It's just they're dating. She also dated Stanley Pottinger, who was a Department of Justice lawyer who helped. I think shut down investigations into some of the abuses of the Nixon administration. But yeah, I mean, it's one of these things that doesn't add up. I mean, so why is, then you have all the Jews behind feminism, but the same people promoting feminism, they're promoting pornography and the Hugh Hefner culture.
Exactly. And
I
why
mean,
would
it's
they
like
do that?
it's like
It's contradictory, but it's the same group. And that's where you can see the agenda, because you can see that both of these strands, even though they seem in opposite directions, actually are entwined and lead to the same place. And now we can see it because we got to the place. I mean, now when you see the women, young women on TikTok talking about their most degenerate sexual experience and bragging about it and being, and willing to be forever branded with it, because once you bring these things on to the internet, when do they ever go away, right?
Well, that's another thing with you with when you promote female promiscuity. And serial, I guess you could say polygamy. Human male and female sexuality are very different. A woman, when she has multiple sexual partners, will have a very difficult time pair bonding and settling down with the guy. Whereas a guy is a little different. He can settle down eventually. And so you really disrupt things when you promote. That's what these TikTok things, you psychologically scar these women forever for this
But, you
stuff.
know, I will say
And
that
lower
I,
their market value, sexual market value.
well, yeah, obviously to zero, basically, because if they are explicitly pornographic and this is something that's on the internet, do you how many of such of these individuals end up with stable families? You know, it's like basically zero. But I would also say that men, in terms of their, ability to settle down, I think that pornography and hookup sex really damages males too. I know that there is this idea that, it's somehow more natural for men to, because they're physically able to have more children in a year.
Well,
They're
it speaks to the game. I mean, guys produce billions of sperm, women 400 eggs
right.
in a lifetime. Yeah,
But
now, that's
my
purely biological, though.
it's at, there is a biological reality, but then there's also a cultural malevolence afoot. And males are being that part of the male personality is being exaggerated. It's being
Oh, of
exaggerated
course. Yeah, the whole
with
Playboy
Hugh
culture.
Hefner and in this kind of lifestyle, it's being exaggerated for the purpose of creating isolation ultimately.
Well,
The
because
thing
you undermine for when the man's a cad and he plays around, well, he can avoid the consequences of it easier than a woman can, because men don't get pregnant, of course, which
no, but
makes women naturally more guarded about it, is he loses if he is doing such a thing. If he is like a Hugh Hefner character, he has no moral authority, and pornography destroys men's moral authority.
And you have to imagine
And by the way, for the man to be the patriarch, he has to have moral authority, because that's where his authority, that's where his credibility authority comes from. So if he compromises that or gives that up just for a fling, yeah, it's disruptive. Then he no longer can claim the he can no longer be the leader of the family in that situation. Yeah.
Right. And I want to, you know, to note that the actual best life that humans can experience is very difficult in many ways. It needs to be promoted culturally in order to, you know, to make this behavior occur frequently. And that has to have a component of romance. In other words, you have to have this strong kind of attractiveness and attraction at a point in life that leads to sexuality, that leads to family and children. And from that perspective, you now can move into middle age and old age with the relationships and
Yeah,
with
there's
that.
a spark, that ignites the
Right,
flame,
right. So
the flame that
there is
lingers.
that these things are actually like the intense sexual, you know, kind of proclivity of men when they're 18 to 24. That is by design. It's biologically coherent, but it's part of a process. It isn't meant, you're not meant to be 80 years old on Viagra like Hugh Hefner is. You know, I
Walking
mean,
around in a robe all day
I mean, this is a
with a
cartoon.
captain's hat on or something.
Yeah, it's a cartoon. It isn't something that is, believe me, would really, I think most, it's not possible for many men to live like this. And I don't think in any way this is, you know, a valuable life that is really very satisfying. So the point is how the natural order of life includes ethnicity, or certainly community, right? Which is just another word in many it originally for ethnicity, but can be other things at this point. But there has to be a community, because that's the only way you can actually contain and promote family. And there has to be a family, and there really should be children, right? Now you have, you know, you also would have the political dimension then, which is what, of course, the has been attacked, is you'd have political power. I mean, think about this. You have your family, you have your community, you have your ethnicity. You're not easy to push around. These
No.
things all work together to support you.
Yeah, you're a
Then
force to be reckoned with.
you're a force to be reckoned with, and that's exactly why the authoritarian personality was written, and that's exactly why Gregor Luchas attacked marriage and promoted degenerate sexuality all the way back in
Yeah,
the
for the record, the Jewish sexual subversion agenda predates the phenomenon of fascism.
by 100 years.
I mean, they were peddling pornography in the late night. As soon as photography was developed, they were peddling pornography. As soon as film,
Sure.
with the Nickelodeons in Philadelphia and these things. So, and of course, Gregor Lukacs and the Hungarian Soviets, 1919, and that's a good, that's a good 14 years before Hitler ascension to power in Germany. So
Yeah,
the
and it wasn't.
authoritarian personality claims that they're doing this to ward off another Hitler. So they have to promote Eros and family dysfunction, lest society become fascist and Hitler come to power again. No. That was just a post, war excuse for this, for the same agenda. In
Yeah.
fact, Hitler came to power largely because of the Jewish agenda of moral subversion in Weimar Germany. But then again,
Well,
but they never blame themselves for anything, do they?
no. Well, Hitler's you know, emergence is complicated. I think the you know, I wrote that article, the Freemason invention of the Nazi Party, which I think people should look at. Just to get a different idea on how this all might have come about. But at the end of the day, the agendas that we are struggling with and are attacking us are pretty obvious once you have a, you
But it's
know,
a
a cold.
reaction. The same way the red pill
Yeah.
and the manosphere, it's a reaction to something. There's a dialectic being played out here. Okay.
Yeah.
Now the problem is for the actions and the reactions, they say. So what's the initial, what's the precipitate act? What's the action that's causing the reaction? And that's you have to one thing that's interesting, we talked about Henry Kissinger and Gloria Steinem dating. and this is just a thought, I'm gonna, when we talk about the current sexual dystopia, and this is not something you I often hear discussed, but you have to consider it, is the broader macroeconomic environment that was created along with the age of feminism in the 1960s and 70s. One thing is, of course, we have Henry Kissinger. He's the one that worked out the petrodollar deal, which sustained life of the dollar, the fiat dollar, debt-based dollar system.
He outsourced all the jobs to China. Yes,
so you had the deindustrialization of the U.S. economy that's facilitated by the petrodollar.
Right, of course.
This creates a finance-based, service-based economy. Now, in an economy that's industrial, agricultural, industrial, and based on production, you're going to have an economy that's going to favor labor, particularly physical labor, upper body strength, effort, real work, not tapping at a keyboard on a computer screen, spilling out spreadsheets in a cubicle in an office somewhere. Okay, real work has to be done, and you're going to have finance and clerical work supporting that. But an economy that's industrial, that's production based, it's going to favor male labor, and it's going to produce wages that makes something like the living wage possible, something you had under Fordism in the 20th century. This was destroyed in the 20th century by the very people who introduced feminism, pornography. So you have Jewish finance capitalism creating a debt-based, service-based economy, over-financialized. This creates a different labor market that no longer favors male labor, male strength. This also makes it very difficult for young men to earn a living that can start a family with. So you have a macroeconomic environment that doesn't favor that. So that's bad. At the same time, you have the inflationary debt-based environment. You have increasing debt, increasing inflation. So no longer does your earnings keep up with the rate of inflation, the finance overall financialized economy. At the same time, you have feminism, the doctrine of feminism, meaning that women don't need men. They need man like a fish needs a bicycle. We've all heard that. As Gloria Steinem said, that they can go out, get a job, get a certificate, they call a degree that we're told is worth something, go out and get a job, put off having a family or put it off, you know, almost forever, squander your precious 20s when your sexual market value is peaking and you can attract a mate and all that. At the same time, men are being marginalized, masculinity is being pathologized. So their authority is being questioned in the role. Even the whole idea of relation, how men and women relate to one another. Men are being feminized and women are being masculinized, if you will. Meaning men are, and which is what the job market does to women anyway. When they go out there, there's a coarseness that sets in with them. They're no longer attending to domestic affairs and these things. So the overall environment doesn't favor that. This is what's occurred in the past 60 years in the United States. So above and beyond all this stuff about all the laws being changed, just the whole structure of the U.S. economy has been retarded and made it so it's hostile to family formation, particularly young family formation. And of course, you don't have young family formation. You know, those families don't develop. You don't have society perpetuating itself. And that's what you have now. It's just funny because you have Henry Kissinger dating Gloria Steinem, and they both... There's the fusion of those two movements, Henry Kissinger bringing in the debt-based fiat dollar, the petrodollar system, the debt, all mounting debt we're seeing today, making it financially impossible for people to go out and get jobs that can earn enough to support a family. And of course, Gloria Steinem promoting the perverse ideology of feminism, making women unattractive to men and men unattractive to women. So the whole game is messed. The whole sexual constitution, whole economic order is disrupted to destroy family formation. I don't know if that was planned or not, but it certainly worked out that way.
It was planned. It was absolutely planned.
By the way, do you agree with my analysis of how the economic order was disrupted? And people don't even think about it because there's a fish know that's swimming in water. They just learn how to develop coping mechanisms, just like this red pill movement with men. They're developing coping mechanisms to deal with today's laws or restrictions or whatever, you know.
Yeah, and as I said, where this goes is genocide, and you can really see it clearly now, because if you look at the fraction of society that has been most influenced, that has basically accepted these ideas most completely, the woke movement, zero children. And I'm not talking, you know, an exaggeration here. I mean, I've seen some studies on this. They're having no children at all. Well, first of all, the components that are transgender are homosexual. They're obviously no children. And then feminists, I mean, if they're particularly if they're dedicated, there's none. Women who are, you know, aggressive in the workforce, how are they going to have time to have kids? And then there's also just the, you know, the antagonism toward men, which is, you know, kind of what we're talking about here that women experience at this point. How's that going to help with family formation? So this group is having no children, and they're being assisted in this by the chemical attack upon their bodies, which in general they're unaware of, right? And they're just eating all the glyphosate-based foods. And
well, if I'm not mistaken, the men
have 60% reduction in their sperm. So this group has no children. They are literally evaporating as members of the human species, right? They're just disappearing. They don't even have, the woke generation has maybe one and a half generation. That's all it could ever produce because, you know, its children production is basically at zero. So we can see now, this is my point, Tim. Now we can see, you know, when we talk about like agreeing with your the concepts that you were just relating, yeah, we can not only agree with them at this point, we can point to reality conclusions of where this goes. They've taken it far enough along the road now of you know, social construction.
Well, isn't it true that if women are taught to compete with men, they'll find men less attractive?
Of course.
And vice versa. Meaning the idea is maybe it increases, actually, it distorts hormonal levels as well. The idea that if women are taught generally to compete with men and sort of become antagonistic as opposed to admiring men, they're not going to be attracted to men. A woman must, in order to be attractive to a man, has to have some level of admiration for him.
Well, it'll be less.
That's
so.
The role. That's the role, right? I mean, you have to be some.
It diminishes. It doesn't.
Diminishes,
doesn't,
yeah.
But everything works to diminish it.
Yeah.
There has to be a little bit of idealization, right? Otherwise, no. You're never going to get married. There has to be some romance. And that's what's really being.
And for the man, in order to get that admiration and maintain it, he has to have some sense of striving and achievement and goal. You see, so it gets back to the base. You're dealing with the natures of the two sexes that are not equal. They complement each other.
Well, exactly. And his sexuality has to be wired to some extent into romance.
Yeah,
because if your sexuality is just wired into Tinder pornographic hookup sex, that's not going to develop much of a relationship, is
no.
it? But when you have the idea of romance, of falling in love, of having this transcendent kind of emotional connection to someone you're sexually attracted to, well, that actually has the capacity to produce you know, marriage, children, and family.
Yeah, and I mean, I saw this one video. You know, again, you can't put too much stock in these videos because obviously they're selected for a reason. Just like you watch these videos of horror stories in family court, divorce, or men's experience when dating. Obviously, you're only going to hear about the bad experiences because the good experiences aren't interesting. It's like news, right? So you can get a very skewed view of how things are out there. But nevertheless, they are bad. I can see it. You can see it in the birth rates. You see it in the marriage rates. So there's a serious problem out there.
Yeah, yeah.
The so it isn't. It's again. It's very older gentlemen like us. We operate under different rules. So I don't want to judge. But I saw a video. I think it was in the UK, and the videographer was asking women, "Are men good for anything?" And all the women said no. They don't need men for anything. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. You know, okay, that's interesting because they're being videotaped on a camera that was probably, first of all, invented by men, put together by men, probably shipped to the country by men on ships. They're in a city with all the buildings, and it was an old British city, like all constructed by men. They're on roads that were paved by men. She's wearing clothes that were probably the raw materials, at least, were probably harvested by men, maybe manufactured by women in a factory in India somewhere, perhaps, or Honduras or Vietnam or something. But I mean, pretty much all the infrastructure that women are able to stay employed is provided by maintained by men.
but also ask this person, what, how do you envision your life when you're 55 years old?
Yes.
What's going to be going on? Are you going to be in a feminist society that has like a drum circle every Friday afternoon? I mean, what do you think your life is going to be? What do you want it to be? The isolation that these people are heading toward is now visible. The fantasies that feminism offered, about meaningful relationships. I mean, these things are possible, but man, they cannot replace family. They just cannot. Family is very difficult. There's a lot of downside to it. Yes, it takes a lot of work. But on the other side, life is just difficult, and it has a tremendous capacity to produce companionship, conversation, feelings of non-isolation. You know, these and particularly if you can link family into a community, you know, where suddenly you have like friends and mm-hmm. This is the life that people need to live in post pornographic era sexual intensity, right? They need to be moving towards something like that, and they can't do it if they gave up their sexuality, the power of their sexuality in their teens and 20s to, you know, just have this hookup sex moment, you know. So I've said this so many times, they have to understand the political attack so they can have a real world, you know, in their real life, a response that is coherent. They can't just start trying to figure out, well, you know, here we are, how do we like have some sex as men who aren't in these the categories that are successful at the moment? You know, I mean, they have to look in a broader way, and they have to be a little more aggressive about trying to understand how in the heck did we get from 1940 to the current moment.
Yeah, like I said, as Roger Devlin points out in his books, there with a revolution, there's a giddy, euphoric phase, static at the, you know, the limit of possibilities, or the expanding possibilities that the revolution allows, the freedom, the liberation. And then you have, of course, the reign of terror, and then you have the reaction and counter-revolution. And perhaps we're going to see a counter-revolution at some point to all this nonsense. You see that with Islam, where I've noticed that there's some in Great Britain and the spiritual void that is Great Britain, a lot of people resorting to Islam because it provides authority in their anarchic lives, particularly women. And so, again, at some point, people need order. Again, it goes back to what that priest says, that you need, you know, only matrimony can control the flesh. These rules, most people can't be reasoned into morality. Particularly women, they need guidance as institutions, shame, societal pressure. These things have proven to be far more effective in maintaining order than a logical argument. Although, again, if you boil it down, if you really deconstruct it, you can find out that there is a logical argument to these things, because there's practical reason, there's morality, there's a practical reason for morality, because there are very, baleful consequences for ignoring the moral law.
I want to give a little example. I was at a charity thing here in, where I live, and Jackson Browne, you know, the
oh, yeah. singer,
he's a agent of evil, but nevertheless, he was there, and they were in between singing, he was talking to the group, and one of them asked him about, what is it like, you know, socially, you know, being like a rock star, and he goes, well, I'll tell you, it sure seemed like a good idea when I got started, but after 20 years of dating, I would rather have been married rather than have lived this life. He actually just came out and said it, you know, and then he just repeated the concept. 20 years of dating didn't work, you know. So there you have it, you know.
I think the Kinks have a song called "The Good Life." It's about that.
Yeah,
having a million women, and you don't even know what it's for anymore. Yeah.
So there it is. It's just like life is very, you know, the process of life, the process by which you can get like a really good, meaningful, you know, the best life, very fragile, very easy to be led astray. That's, to get moving in a direction, we have to, like, particularly with young people, tell them they've got to develop the grit you know, they have to really start with the grit. And that, of course, starts with, I think, you know, with mental clarity that you've been attacked. And so you have to have the strength now to respond to the attack. You know, that's, I kind of see it to some extent starting to happen. There is a kind of rebellion against hookup sex, against feminism. You know, it's, these things are occurring. People can see now. Well, we're not, it's not really popular yet, but it could be, could happen soon.
Well, one thing I do, again, I look at some of these life coaches, these red pill, you know, manosphere advice. Some of them is very sound. One thing that it's telling men just simply to say no to women, meaning that this is the way it's going to be, or we're just not going to take part in it. And that sort of negative feedback is important, because for the longest time, it's been told men just to man up. The conservative, again, as Devlin criticizes in the book, the conservatives who give advice saying man up and commit. But this kind of answer, men must, doesn't really address the issue today. Meaning at this point with, you know, 30, 40, 50 years of this feminist insanity, at some point men have to say, no, we're not going to put up with this anymore. And I don't mean that, yeah, it doesn't say that they should refuse to date or marry. What it means is they have to reimpose some of the old so-called sexist standards, and even some of the, even the double standards on society. That's how you kept hypergamy in check and kept women behaving properly. Because it's all right now, the general culture is to tell women to misbehave and to hell with the, and never have to deal with the consequences. We hear a lot about women's rights. Well, that's like women's rights, right? Women's right. What about women's duties and obligations? Do they have any duties and obligations? If they have rights, they have to have duties and obligations. That's what human, you know, rights exist along with obligations and duties. You know, animals, you know, that's why animal rights really don't exist, because they don't have duties. Although out of compassion, we acknowledge humane treatment of animals, it may or may not, but they don't really, the rights the same way the human beings have rights. This, as Devlin argues, it's the only way to rein in female hypergamy, which is unleashed by feminism for destructive purposes, not to liberate women, but to enslave them. They're victims in a way. So they're not the enemy. They're the victims of this. But somehow you have to restore, it's up to men to restore order. And the first step that is saying no to this now.
Right. What men need to do is to, first of all, categorize their social interactions.
Well, stop watching pornography.
Right. Well, for one, exactly. Yes. Yeah. And but also don't hang out in a pornographic culture. You know, mm-hmm. don't go out with people who go out to bars to try to find hookup sex, or to find blackout alcohol moments, or in fact, try to find the other side. Try to find groups where virtue, you know, that people are actually doing things that at the end of the day could enable them to have a family, right? I mean, that has to do with both physical strength and also financial coherency, right? Having some kind of means of support, some sort of ability to look to the future where you'd have, you know, some stability. So what men need to prepare for family, right? And there's many ways they can be doing
well,
that.
Well, that's advice where it's very sad. It goes, don't chase women. Chase success, chase goals, and if on your way to those goals and success, you will attract the right women.
Exactly, and particularly if
also often some of the wrong women. But you have to discern.
Well, and say no to that. But you need to look for. You can always look for good moral individuals to associate with, and if you do that, if you just say, you know, I'm not going to hang out with this crowd because, frankly, you know, cocaine and alcohol and, you know, I mean, you know, gambling, whatever it is that these, where does that go? I'm just going to say no to that and try to find people who are interested in the things that actually could be, you know, family or, you know, could work into a life that, you know, would actually have a future, some kind of, so this is the, you know, that's one thing that everyone can do. Is look for better people to associate with. Look for people who share the understanding. And then once you find them, try to develop an articulation about what we're experiencing. Why are we, you know, this little small clustered group that is not part of the, you know, all of the people in our class, say you're in a university, that are that are going out and just getting blackout drunk. You know, I mean, I my children went to universities, and all I can say is that, you know, the universities are structured to produce degeneracy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think my kids were lucky. They had a different kind of background. They were able to get other things out of universities. But in general, the universities are to be avoided at this point at all costs. You have, mm-hmm. you do not let your kids go in. You know, and there are some exceptions, but, you know, into like a UC or an Ivy League school, forget that. That's just going to, like you say, they end up with blue hair, you know, and, you know, male hating and all the other attributes. So, you know, these things are kind of commonsensical, you know, just stay away from people who are degenerate and try to find people around you that have some kind of moral vision. You know?
Yeah. And also supporting, as I address the sort of the macro economy has been made hostile to these things. And these are policies. These are individuals that have advocated these policies, foreign policy, the wars that drive up national debt, the economic situation that has created a deindustrialized, you know, hollowed out economy. You know, those are policies that have to be reversed.
You know, would be interesting if I was like, say, like a university, university in Seattle, just as an example. I would try to find a group of guys that I could go with on the weekends out to the small towns in Olympia, mm-hmm. that are being populated now by people leaving the fentanyl brigade behind, right? And seeing if you can make social contact out there. Just show up, say, you know, hey, we're you know, coming from Seattle, but we're looking for a little more social, positive life. Like to introduce ourselves, you know, maybe do you know any like, you know, young women that would have this kind of as a background? Try to create actual moments of segregation, you know, get out of the area that is just under, I mean, like in Seattle's a good example, or Portland, any of these places that are just weighed down with degeneracy.
Well, yeah, if you do that, you at least you'll get a break from all the propaganda and cultural programs.
Don't spend the weekends there. Try to get out of town and say, well, gee, is there any other, you know, group of people we can find out here to hang out with? Maybe we can find a path forward here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and get off social media.
Yeah, do not. I mean, just throw that stuff away, you know?
Yeah, so. Okay, Joe.
All right, Sam. Well, it's been a high movement into social order here. Let's hope it continues, huh?
Enjoy the weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.